Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Welcome to Stealing Beauty. We are Fat Mascara. I am Jessica Matlin.
I'm Jen Goldstein. Hi.
First of all, I want to give a very big thank you to all of our panelists who've generously offered to come here today. This is a very tricky topic, cultural appropriation in beauty. Very sensitive. There is no perfect language for it, and it's obviously something that people are very impassioned about. So just want to say it's a safe space here. People should say how they
space.
Feel.
Yeah.
And not worry about walking on eggshells.
Exactly. So to get started, I think we're going to all introduce ourselves. And I know this is really weird and un-PC, but because we're an audio podcast with thousands of listeners who can't see our faces, I'm going to ask you also to share not just what you do and who some of your clients are, but also your ethnicity and your race. If you feel comfortable doing that, it's sort of important to know for the topic we're talking about tonight. So, Mally, you're smiling away over there. Why don't you start?
I was going to say, can I pretend to be something else?
I mean, people can Google you later, so.
So I better not. I'm 6'2", Scandinavian. Just kidding. Kidding. Hi there. I'm Mally Roncal. I am, I feel like it's like a dating site, right, or something. I'm a celebrity makeup artist, and I founded a brand of cosmetics called Mally Beauty. I have had the pleasure for many years to work with Beyonce, Jennifer Lopez, Mary J. Blige, Celine Dion. You know, been around the block. I'm actually 107 years old. Thank you. But yes, and I am Filipino, 100% Filipino. Great. Thank you.
Al. Ursula. Al.
Hello, my name is Ursula Steven. I am a celebrity hairstylist you know.
We've both been around the block together.
Yes. And a salon owner. And I'm a black, well, Caribbean American woman.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
There you go.
Alicia. Hi, I'm Alicia Yoon. I'm the founder of a Korean beauty retail site, as well as we have a couple stores called Peach and Lily. And we also distribute these Korean beauty brands that we import into the U.S. to retailers like Sephora, QVC, Target, etc. And I'm Korean American. I was actually born in Korea in the US until I was 12 and actually moved back to Korea. And I was there pretty much until college. And my family still lives there. So I don't know, some days I feel very Korean and other days I feel more American.
And I'm Jen Goldstein. I'm the executive beauty editor at Marie Claire. So Goldstein's a Jewish name, but I'm adopted. I'm actually Iranian, part South Asian, part Middle Eastern, and about a little bit European. So wow. I'm a big mix. And Jess?
I'm Jessica Matlin. I am the beauty and health director at Teen Vogue, and I have an interesting mix of, well, my parents were born here, but going back a generation or two, Russian, French, Turkish, and people are usually shocked to find out that my grandmother is a Puerto Rican immigrant.
Nice.
Yeah. So let's get into it. You started off, Jess.
Okay.
One quarter Puerto Rican woman.
All right. I'm a Puerto Rican Jew. So we're here to discuss the topic of cultural appropriation of beauty, which has come up repeatedly in the beauty industry, and it's a topic that's come up constantly with our guests, just comes up really naturally. So this term wasn't used even a fraction as much in the past 10 years as it has within like the past 12 months. Why do you think that is, and was this something you've thought about during your career? Ursula, I'd like to ask you to speak to that first. Sure. So, cultural appropriation is a term that's really come up a lot in beauty in the past, like, you know, year, more than it has probably, I would like venture to guess, more, you know, now than it has in the past 10 years. Why do you think that is?
Social media. It's always been around. I just think it's a lot more in our faces now because we have that visual to attach with it. We have, you know, Instagram, we have Twitter, we have everything to show us. It was always there. It's just now being talked about because it's so popular. The visual of it has become so popular.
Did you think about that, like, all throughout your career, like seeing music videos or other, you know, contemporary shoots, be like, that's cultural appropriation?
I think when I saw it back then, that word probably was non-existent to me in my vocabulary at the time. I think what I thought about when I saw other races doing things that my race has done for years and, you know, made it popular, I was bothered by the fact that when other races did it, it became so amazing and so popular, but we have been doing it for so long and we didn't get the recognition.
Right.
So that's what I noticed when I watch videos and things. Like, I see a girl, you know, of another race wearing maybe hot pink hair or crimps or crazy, and it's like, oh my God, it's so fashion, so editorial. But then when my race did it, it was ghetto, it was ugly, it was horrible, you know? So that's the weird part of it.
Mally, you're nodding your head. Can you comment on that?
That thing with that's so fashionable, that was always kind of funny to me. And you know, we were talking about this before we started. You know, I'm Filipino. Obviously, I have like almond shaped eyes. I've got the whole thing. In the sense that when I was growing up, I was the only sort of non-white girl in my, you know, in my high school, and so I'd have, you know, very sweet young girl saying like, oh my gosh, can you do a cat eye for me? Because you actually have one of those. Like, you know, and to me, I was never like, well, that's rude. To me, I was like, oh, well, that's kind of fierce. You know what I mean? Because growing up, being not really, you know, not having anyone to look to say, hey, you're just like me. You know, it was actually kind of a nice, you know, compliment, you know? I mean, I think it's completely natural, right? I mean, living in New York and this amazing place and traveling all over the world, you see so many things. And when you're an artist, you can't help but be inspired,
sure,
you know, by what you're looking at and being attracted to it and wanting to see how you can recreate it. But I think, you know, you have to be obviously sensitive to where you're getting this inspiration and give credit where credit is due. Yes. You know?
I agree.
why do you think it is that the beauty world seems to get called out more for cultural appropriation lately, more so than, let's say, fashion? Like, I think about designers like Isabel Marant or, you know, even like DVF, you know, season after season, Tory Burch, always using prints and stuff for motifs from another country, and I rarely see the kind of like social media outrage that I've seen with beauty. Like, why do you think beauty is in the hot seat right now? Alicia, what do you think?
I think I was thinking about this question, and I think beauty is
ultimately, I think, very psychological. There's this psychological aspect to what beauty ideals are and how that empowers you. And so with fashion, you know, of course, with any industry or any media platform or any fashion show, it's always a medium to express concepts and ideas and, you know, that are good or bad or hurtful or helpful in kind of progressing our dialogue as a community together. But I think with beauty, because it can touch like a very core part of you, you know, like growing up, I feel like as a teenager, I always think being a beauty retailer, we're extremely privileged to be able to communicate to people about what they think about what beauty means. And we try to create a very safe space as a retailer when we're answering customer service emails and so forth, because it's a very psychological evolution. When you're a teenager, you're kind of trying out a lot of different looks. Mm-hmm. You're going through a little bit more of an insecure phase, and not even in a bad way, because you're just figuring things out. And, you know, you have acne and all sorts of issues. You know, when you're more, when I look at my mom, who's in her 60s now, there are things that she can't say that I know she wants to say. You know, she still wants to feel beautiful. And sometimes, you know, I can see that she's a little bit like, I used to be really beautiful, and you came along, and your sister came along. You know, it took a toll.
And you ruined it.
Yeah, and sometimes you feel like you're not allowed to say that. Yeah. So I think with beauty, because it's so psychological, when it's really done in a way that almost it's like cultural misappropriation, it can, you know, really,
it
I think
cuts rub. Deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's your face and your hair. You can't really take it off.
That was my point. I was thinking about that as well. It's what you are communicating with. Right, so you're looking in somebody's eyes and you're seeing their hair and you're seeing their skin and you're seeing, you know what I mean? And it's like a little bit more personal than you can take off that top. You know what I mean? If I'm offending somebody, I could take it off. I can't rip my face off.
A little more permanent.
Yes, and my hair is dyed blonde and I am not taking it out.
Well, thinking about the thing that has been coming up lately is, at what point are we appropriating and at what point are we just influenced or inspired by? So I just wanted you two, Mally and Ursula, create looks on other people. Is there a personal gauge you use to know, this might have just crossed the line into not influencing by, but stealing from? Like, how do you decide?
You want
to
go?
Well, I've never really been in that position to have to make that type of decision, you
right.
know? But I'm a creative person, so I don't like barriers. I don't like rules. I just like to do what feels great to me. And I remember, was it last year, VMA maybe? I did a crown braid on Iggy Azalea. And she got so much slack for it. And it was like, hello, her hairstylist is black. Okay, I did that. And I thought it was amazing because that, you know, people didn't realize that the person that did the actual hairstyle was a black person. And I give her what people would consider a black hairstyle because it was braids and it was a crown and it was all that. But I just thought it came from a creative place.
Absolutely.
You know, and
it
looks good. I don't like to have restrictions.
Do you respond to that? Like when people were, you know, tweeting about that, do you actually?
Oh, she responds.
No, I don't. I'm a good girl. I do not respond. I'm bigger than that.
I know, I'm just kidding.
No, I don't respond. I don't feel the need to. Because I feel like everyone has their own opinion and they have a right to feel the way they want to feel. But this is my job and I'm going to make sure my client feels amazing and she loved her hair. Mm-hmm. So.
That's right. I am, you know, I'm the same way. When you're an artist or when you are coming from a place of purity and you're working with a client that trusts you and you guys have this rapport, you cannot put barriers. I mean, of course, there are lines that you can cross. I don't really know what they are. I think if you're, you know, you feel like, you know, you're insulting someone. But I don't see how, you know, if you are inspired by something, you're loving it. You're putting it on a pedestal. You're giving it an opportunity to put it in the forefront. If you have a client that, you know, is being seen by millions of people around the world, you're honoring that, you know? So to me, I think that it's a compliment, right. You know?
That dovetails very nicely into the most recent example of, you know, runway controversy. We wanted to break down this discussion a bit and talk about the Marc Jacobs look. Yeah. So if you guys aren't bored of that yet. So he sent down models with rainbow dreadlocks and, you know, his inspiration and Guido Palo, the hairstylist, he said that it was, you know, early 90s, you know, London club kids, you know, bubblegum goth. It was everything but, you know,
Rastafarians.
African-American heritage.
That's the problem that I have.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think it's so much deeper than the actual hairstyle. I feel like when that hairstylist gives those type of references and say it's not that, it's bullshit. Because it is. Dreadlocks is from an African culture. And I think that's what a lot of African Americans are upset with. They don't care. You can wear a wig if you're white. If you can wear braids if you're white. We don't care. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't care. But they want that recognition.
So you think that was like, it wasn't the problem, if I'm hearing you correctly, it wasn't the problem that Mark or Guido sent the dreads down. It was the misstep that he didn't just connect that dot. Like he could have saved himself with one sentence.
Right. Like, give credit where it's due. And let's be clear. Like, in the 80s in London, Boy George and people, that's what happened. There are black people in London. Hello. Like, you know, it's true. Like, I'm sure that was an inspiration. But go a little deeper and say that it is from the African-American culture. That's where it really derived from. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't do maybe hot pink and blonde, all those things, because that wasn't accessible to us at the time. But that's where dreadlocks are from, you know? So I think that's what a lot of African-American people are upset of. They don't get that credit.
And what about, we had some people on Instagram commenting, well, you know, those were Egyptian and Greek. And then in my head, I was like, and also I'm sure cavemen way back in the day didn't brush their hair and had dreadlocks of a sort. But is it that if it becomes known with one culture in the modern world, like you'd just be ignorant to ignore that that's an African-American hairstyle? Like, what do you say when people start nitpicking of like, well, let's really go back in the history of it? Is that beside the point?
I mean, that's different because, you know, like I said, it you do have black people in London, so it came from other places. Mm-hmm. But give credit to where it's due. That's just how I feel. Like, just give credit to where it's due and just really recognize where it's from. And I realized that even I've done interviews with, you know, publications, and they're like, can you comment on this new look? And I'm like, they have this weird name for like a top knot or whatever. And I'm like, it's not that. It's just a top knot. You know, I feel like they're just getting bored and just running out of different names, and they want to make it seem like it's something different.
Yeah, that's our fault as beauty editors.
You're not reinventing the wheel. You're not doing that. It is what it is. It's dreads. It's dreadlocks. Come on.
What was troubling to me though is that so many people, you know, before the show barely had even ended, but in that time between, you know, people reporting on the look and, you know, sending each other pictures and the show starting at 2 p.m. or 2:30, people were calling, you know, such terrible names. Like, it was this very kind of yes, no binary, he's a horrible person, you know, and there was, people hadn't even seen the show and they hadn't even, they just jumped very quickly to conclusions. It was like this trial by tweet, you know? Yes. What do you guys think as artists creating something, like, did that frighten you at all?
The artistic censorship of it?
Yeah.
That you'll be afraid in the future to maybe do something and push the envelope.
Some people, I told them, I said, okay, you know, the look was, you know, cyber goth, and I was like naming some references that Guido had thrown around. I was like, oh, you know, like kind of, you know, Perry Farrell or, you know, Linda Perry from just these early 90s icons, and they were like, they had, their faces went blank. Like, they just jumped so quickly on the bandwagon, whether or not he was right or wrong, and I completely agree, you know, he hung himself with that by not making that connection. It was frightening how quickly people will, you know, say yes or no.
Well, that's, I mean, again, that's the world, to your point, that we live in now. Does it scare me? No, it doesn't scare me. We're still always, at a certain point, you are who you are. You put yourself out there. Look, we were talking about this in general, just the way social media, which, you know, we all have a love, little bit of hate relationship with, right? Because you can't like take a dump without somebody commenting, right? And that's the thing, you know. But again, you put yourself out there.
Right.
I haven't done that right now. so you know. But you can't, but in the same breath, as artists, you also do ask for it, right? You crave that.
Right.
You want people to say yes. Oh, I love that, what you did, right? So you're like, wait.
But at least they're talking.
Exactly, exactly. But you cannot be afraid of that.
Right.
You know, you can't be afraid of that, or then you die a little bit inside as an artist, you know.
Right. And Alicia, you as a retailer and running some social media accounts for your brand, you have to be extra careful. Do you have a policy at all of like whether to engage or not engage when you either people are getting insulting to each other? How do you deal with that?
So definitely, if we see people, and we actually don't see this too much in our community, but if we see people really being offensive with each other,
yeah,
and we find that one person really is kind of harassing somebody, and they're like doing it from a fake account, you know, we'll actually
the trolls.
Yeah, we'll actually block them and yeah. make sure that we continue to create a safe community. If they're saying something directly to us, we address it. We are definitely not afraid to.
Have you gotten any sort of comments like that?
No, not actually on this topic. Mm-hmm. But we are, I think, because Korean beauty, I think, is a little bit of a different topic. I think that the only time I feel that there's been a little bit of sensationalism or things taken really out of context would be like when I get, I don't know, interview emails where people are like, what's the craziest ingredient in Korean beauty products?
And yeah.
Korean beauty products
there's
are
so much
than
yeah.
just that. But I would say with our customers, we actually don't receive a lot of that kind of vibe mm-hmm. because we focus so much on empowering them with knowledge and the whole context around it.
Right.
But I do think that whether it's us or a designer or an artist, I do think that it's very idealistic to say it all exists in a vacuum, but the reality is it doesn't. Mm-hmm. So I do think that, you know, there is fortunately or unfortunately a bit of a responsibility with anyone who has a public forum to think broader about like the cultural context. And I think it's honestly complete like nonsense if someone's like, what about if you go into the history of this and it belongs to the Greeks? Because we're talking about as people generally understand culture.
Right.
So in the broader cultural context.
Don't nitpick.
Yeah, and also in the social context, if there are things that are very blatantly, unfortunately, still there isn't this, you know, racism still exists. There are still issues that are not resolved that
right.
are really relevant. Mm-hmm. And to then just say like, yeah, but in this one regard, we're just going to nitpick and go, you know.
You can't do that.
You have to see the overall context.
It brings up the topic of ownership a bit. So, for example, when we saw the Marc Jacobs show, here we are two white girls wanting to talk about it on our podcast. And then we realized, well, are we even allowed to say if it made us feel uncomfortable? Because it wasn't our culture technically being appropriated. So what do you guys think about that? Do you think it's okay for anyone to call out something as inappropriate, or at least say, hey, let's talk about this, or it's the people who are. Okay, everyone, guess what I did last night? I slept in my Honeylove bra. I don't think I've ever slept in a bra before. Usually, I am so excited to take off my bra at the end of the day, there would be no chance I would lay down in it. But Honeylove bras are that comfortable. And if you're someone who does like to sleep in a bra for a little extra support, I feel like the Honeylove crossover bra should be your sleeping bra. Did I just coin a thing, sleeping bra? I don't know if they'll approve of that, but I love the idea. Obviously, you're gonna wear it out all the time too, because Honeylove's bras feature supportive bonding that eliminates the need for uncomfortable wires. Plus, they're made with a fabric that's so soft, it feels like a second skin. Is it spring cleaning time in your house? I know it is in mine. Clean out your bra drawer, get a few from Honeylove. They have the V-neck bra that's smooth and seamless and hardware free. And then my personal favorite is the crossover bra with adjustable straps and a hook back closure. And of course, again, no underwire in that one either. The Honeylove supportive bonding lifts and supports without those uncomfortable wires. And while you're at it, why not pair your Honeylove bra with their matching shapewear, or maybe a pair of their breathable, versatile leggings. Treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/mascara. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off. It's honeylove.com/mascara. And then after you purchase, they're going to ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we here at Fat Mascara sent you. Honeys, you deserve this. Again, that website is honeylove.com/mascara for 20% off.
All right, it's not often that we talk about supplements, but when we do, you know that we mean it, all right?
every day I do my skincare routine, and that is a cleanse. I moisturize. Of course, I pop a little antioxidant in there. I'll do a little serum underneath there. But what is non-negotiable for me lately is I take a supplement. That is my Ritual Hyacera. It's a wrinkle support skin supplement, which is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and improve skin smoothness. I'll take that.
I'll take it too. Ritual Hyacera is a once daily skin supplement. Jess said clinically proven. Let me give you the deets. In a clinical study, Hyacera led to a 3.6 time reduction in crow's feet wrinkles within 90 days as compared to placebo. Jess and I have been taking it more than 90 days. Let me tell you, it works. Plus, Ritual Hyacera has led to a 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness in the same amount of times. It's rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. You don't always know if a supplement does that. Ritual also has industry-leading sustainability standards. They use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, love that, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. Plus, female-founded, B Corp, meaning they're holding themselves accountable to not just their company's financial health, but also the health of the people and our planet. You gotta love that.
Yes, okay. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust.
Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/mascara. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/mascara for 25% off. Okay, so there are some stories about my mom's life that I never get tired of hearing, and they're usually the ones in which she's trying to right some injustice and then ends up annoying the people in power, and I love that about her. Anyway, just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve memories and stories for the mother figure in your life or any of your family or chosen family. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. The prompts are really good. The kind of things we ask guests here at Fat Mascara, little things like what's your favorite board game? And more important things like what's the best advice you've ever gotten? Storyworth makes the writing process a breeze. All your loved one needs to do is respond to the email with a story, long or short, doesn't matter. You'll be emailed a copy of what they wrote, but they'll also be collected. So you'll get to enjoy the retelling of the stories and probably learn some new things in the process. Then after that year of fun, Storyworth automatically compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. Even though I know some of my mom's best stories, I love that the weekly prompts are helping to uncover more details and that they'll be collected in one place for me to revisit and read through. Don't think I'm not going to pull this keepsake book out at our next family get together to share some of them. Listen, everyone loves Storyworth. It has more than 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, with millions of stories preserved since they were founded over 10 years ago. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/mascara. That's storyworth.com/mascara to save $10 on your first purchase.
Feeling offended that should have the right to say it first. Like if, yeah. I mean, we could use the Marc Jacobs Show as an example. I mean, some of the first people to write about it probably weren't African American. They were like white girls at Refinery wanting to get clicks or something. I don't know.
It's a tough one. I personally don't feel like I own anything. Right? I don't own a cornrow. Right. I don't own a weave. This is not even my real hair. Right. You get what I'm saying? I don't own a damn thing.
Right.
What am I supposed to do?
You're happy that the conversation got started, yeah, no matter like, how it got started.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't own it. You know, I embrace it because it is part of my culture. But I like this too,
right?
I like straight hair, and I like Asian hair. I like to be bone straight someday.
You like all kinds
of
hair.
You know, so it's like, I don't know.
I know.
You're not offended if someone else speaks for you on that topic?
No.
As long as it's being brought up.
Because guess what? Because you can be a white girl and have grown up in the deep, deep south, and you might be blacker than me.
Right.
So you can speak about it if you feel like it. If you feel connected about it, then you can
totally.
Go ahead and you can speak about that. If you feel offended, that's fine for you.
That's right.
Fine. Mm-hmm. I know some black girls that are so white. I'm like, oh my God. And like real, I'm like, where did you grow up? You know what I mean? And some of them, they don't relate to the average black girl. So at this point in time, it's no longer really
it's not
about
a race
color.
Thing. It's a culture right. thing.
It's not a So I'm staying out of that one. I don't own nothing.
Look, I've had people come up to me
as you know, as an Asian or Pacific Islander or whatever, who I was born with black, shiny, straight Asian hair. I have no eyelashes. These are glued on. My hair is dyed. There's some pieces in there too. I, you know, my skin is not this brown. You know what I mean? And I've had people say to me, "Ooh, you have three daughters. And do you feel like you are saying to them that you're not proud of who you
people?
Are? I know. Get a fucking life. Oh, you can cut that one out. Right? Exactly. So, you know what I mean? And then, first of all, none of your business. Second of all, no, I don't. Because this amazing, incredible world that we live in, where you can, yes, go onto the internet and see incredible, beautiful women of all, you know, races and men and the whole nine yards. I don't care. You know what? And if my daughter says to me, "I want to have blue dreadlocks," you know what? I'm going to let her have blue dreadlocks. I'm going to tell her, where did it come from? I think it is. It's about educating. Mm-hmm. Educating, because it is important that we know where all these amazing looks come from. And that's just history. You know what I mean? So if we think about it like that, then yes, it's about knowing where your influence comes from and appreciating it and giving it the credit that it's due.
That leads me to my next question. I mean, I think you've kind of already half answered it. So, you know, the Mark Show kind of, you know, that stirred up some questions to me. Like, do people kind of want each other to stay in their lanes? Like, certain designers can't reflect this, or, you know, does it kind of put borders up? But you're saying if your daughter, you know, wants blue dreadlocks, then, you know, so it goes. Do you think this is where we're going now? I mean, I wonder, I felt like, you know, Mark is a very, I'm not bringing it back to Mark to like beat a dead horse here, but it's
a good example.
Good case study. Yeah.
It's our case study.
Yeah,
there you
Mark
go.
Mark is our case study tonight.
Yeah.
He doesn't know it, but he is.
And here he is. No.
But, you know, it's a very, like, he's a very liberal guy. Fashion industry is a very liberal idea, and it frightened me to see kind of the walls closing in, like, this person can't reflect that. This is you stay in your lane, you stay in. I don't have to agree with what he did, but I, you know, I'll kind of, it's kind of a cliche thing to say, but like, I'll defend his right to do it.
Right.
So,
sure.
Where do
sure.
you guys stand on that?
Staying in your lane. I feel like Mally's not going to stay in her lane.
Hell no.
Staying in no lane. I own all these lanes. These are all my lanes. I got everything.
Exactly.
It's all mine.
We're swerving.
Alicia, what about you? Right.
I think, so definitely I think mixing lanes is great. But I do think that I am really, I cringe when I see like Asian representations. I don't know, like an Asian woman made to look super demure and like, I don't know, like, things in her hair, like chopsticks in her hair. No one does that in Asia. So that is not, you know, like, if you're going to go in that lane,
yeah,
you know, try to understand that lane and be like, understand the authenticity of it. And, you know, totally fine if somebody wants to have, you know, some Korean inspiration and Hanbok derived colors, you know, but if that's reduced down to some very strange stereotype, you know, that then bothers me.
I think it's almost like, I'm sorry, it's almost like good art versus bad art. It's like not even about being political. It's like some stuff's cringeworthy and stupid, and that's
not,
stuff
like,
is
it's
inspiring.
Not even real and inspiring or compelling to
but
anyone.
You do bring up the topic of exoticism, which is something that's a little bit different from cultural appropriation, if I understand it correctly. But basically, that's taking a type of woman or race and just like going there to the nth degree, just like exoticizing it. Like, let's put the Native American girl with like braids, and let's stick chopsticks in the Asian girl's hair, and, you know, some tribal makeup on the dark skin girl. Do you guys think that is as dangerous as cultural appropriation? Like, when you see a fashion spread and you're like, of course they made the black girl wear that outfit, or of course they made the Asian girl like have the red geisha lip. Does that bother you?
A lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think, especially for me, maybe because I grew up, my formative years were spent in Korea. When I came back for college, it was like I really noticed it, and it was so weird to me.
So American media does do that a lot.
Yeah, especially, I mean, I don't know, there was like a whole incident back then where like Urban Outfitters had this like weird shirt, and, you know, there's like a lot of instances where, you know, if you're not used to seeing that around, you know, Korea's pretty homogenous. There's mostly just Koreans there, so seeing I don't know, Asians represented that way. And I was like, what does that even mean? There's so many different Asian countries with very, very different cultures. And so, yeah, that bothers me because I think that really simplifies things and objectifies that culture and, like, lumps every culture together just from Asia. So, yeah, I think that is not – it gets pretty dangerous.
It seems like it almost bothers you more than the cultural appropriation in a way. It doesn't bother you, Ursula?
No.
No?
I don't see if I look at a magazine and they're doing a spread with different cultures or whatever, and they're, you know, embracing my culture, and the black girl has an Afro braids, I'm not upset with that. That's our hair, you know. If I see it, if it's an Asian girl and they decide to do, like you said, chopsticks, I have no problem with that, because when visually you think Asian culture, you think that, you think chopsticks, you think, you know, you think, when you think African American culture, you think braids, cornrows, you think those things. So if it's a spread and it makes sense, I don't have no problem with it. Now, if you're making fun and now it becomes negative, that's different.
Right.
Then I feel like, you know, because I decided to look up the actual book meaning of racial appropriation. That's what it's called, right? And it just basically says one culture embracing another culture. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say anything negative. Anything
not positive, beating
just
them
say
down.
Embracing it. Mm-hmm. So if you feel like you want to wear cornrows, but you're not wearing cornrows and making fun of cornrows, why should I have a problem with you wearing cornrows? Right. You're just embracing my culture. That means you like it.
So if a girl comes back from Jamaica, like sunburnt with freckles and her cornrows in, I think some Kardashians even did this recently.
Nothing is wrong with that, because when you go to Jamaica, the Jamaican girls are like, come, let me braid your hair. They want to do it. If you've ever been to Jamaica and you're on the beach, the Jamaican are going to come to you, whether you are white, black, Chinese, or whatever you are, they are going to ask you to braid your hair.
I'd be nervous.
Because they love their culture and they want you to embrace their culture. That's why they're doing it. And they want the money. They're trying to get money. You know what I mean? So it's like,
go ahead, Alicia.
Really get upset.
So I think that's fine. Like, I think if there was a representation of, like, an Asian girl, like, looking just genuinely, like, whatever is, like, the red lips doesn't bother me. The chopstick and the hair, like, that kind of thing bothers me, because that's
because we use them to eat, not to put in our hair. Yeah.
Nobody in Asia walks around with chopsticks in their hair. Like, there's, like, hair pins, but we don't put chopsticks in our hair. So it bothers me because I feel like people get really misinformed. Like, nobody uses that as hair pins.
Right.
And so, you know, a black girl with braids in her hair, I think that's one thing, because, you know, it's a real thing. But I think as long as it's, like, authentically and accurately represented.
Do your homework.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I like that.
Okay, so talking about Alicia, I want to ask you something. when it comes to products, does it annoy you when you see U.S. companies blatantly rip off basically what you do, which is, you know, you are the K-beauty, Korean beauty authority. Is this a pet peeve?
I have, like, a very, like, very conflicting feelings about it. On the one hand, it's very frustrating because I feel, not personally annoyed, but I feel for these Korean beauty brands that came up with that innovation first. And they spent so much R&D money on it, and they poured their heart and soul into it. And then a new Western beauty brand, or just like a different Western beauty brand, will make something exactly the same. And usually actually with like a formulation that's a little bit different, where it might not be as effective even. And then there's no at all, I mean, of course, I understand the commercial reasons behind it, but there's no even like nod towards where it, you know, originally came from.
Yeah, that's shady.
Yeah, so that's Melly, like, wants to jump
in. She's saying what I'm saying about dreadlocks. Yeah, you just like, feel like give the credit where, like, same thing.
Like, come up with your own innovation.
Right.
If you're not going to at least, you know, mention, like, this is inspired from, you know, the innovations we saw in Korea, or it's just, it's definitely, but then at the same time, you know, there's a sense of pride that I'm like, wow, Korean beauty is super innovative, and people need to look there to come up with different inspirations.
Right, because you can't think of your own ideas. Mm-hmm. Well, like when BB creams came out, like I was like, anybody going to say where they came from? You know what I mean? Yeah. Because that was the thing, right? It was everywhere. And, you know, I
and
feel
just
like...
just to clarify, BB creams came from
Korea.
Korea. Yes.
Did they?
Well, so apparently
there's some. I've heard Germany too.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Germany from someone the other day. But
so it was Germany in the 60s. But then it was reformulated.
Oh, the expert here. Oh. What is it?
Okay. So I actually met the guy who created BB cream in Korea.
We are doing our homework.
We have to make a phone call after this.
He got his inspiration from this formulation he saw in Germany in the 1960s. But then he completely changed it and sort of reimagined it. But
did he appropriate it? Was he influenced by? This is where we get tricky, right?
I think that it was great because he actually is very open about it. He's like, I was inspired by this thing I saw from Germany that's no longer really in the market, or that, you know, I think it's no longer in the market. And so he's very open when he talks about that. And the company themselves, you know, they're in media and so forth, you know, they tell me, yeah, we're very excited about this fact. Also, because Koreans, I think, you know, think it's Germany, the technology, they respect the technology coming from there and so forth. And so it's more that when it came to the U.S., it was just, you know, all that history is gone. But, you know, I do think technically, you know, maybe it kind of depends on how he describes it, but the formulation is actually pretty different, and this guy completely invented that.
Well, let me give you another example, because copying a product is one thing, but there are some companies that have made their name on going to other cultures, learning their beauty secrets, coming back to America, and bottling them. For example, there's hair companies that have gone to tribes in Amazon and found the oils that they use. They come back here, they charge like $60 a bottle for it. Ursula, you're the hairstylist here. Have you seen that happen? And did you ever think, they should probably give back some money, or they might want to like give credit where it's due?
I mean, you know, it's easy to say that, but how do you physically do it? You know, it's like saying if I walk down the street and I see a black girl wearing braids, is she supposed to bow to me every time she sees a black girl walk? You know, how do you do it? You know,
right.
I can't really answer it. You
some
know,
of these
they have the money. That's why they go there. They have the mat.
Right, because some
the money they can do that. You know, I don't know. Maybe they can, maybe employ the people that are from the country and get them involved.
I think some
that's
of those companies
great way to do it. You know,
do.
In theory, yeah.
In theory,
yeah. You know, like how do you really do it? I don't have the answer.
Mally, as you've been developing products, do you ever go somewhere and see an idea and want to bring it back and worry that you're.
No. Well, first of all, I try, again, being Filipino, I mean, I don't have to go far, right? I look to my grandmother and my mom, and, you know, I look at how I grew up, and I get a lot of inspiration from that. But, you know, I won't get, that's another podcast about people taking your products, but we won't go into that right now. No, I'm just kidding. But you know what I mean? As a, you know, independent, dependent for, you know, 12 years now, Mally Beauty's been around, and there's been many times when I, you know, and I sell my products on TV, right? So I'm constantly telling the story of why I created it and how it came about and blah, 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 and X, Y, and Z. And then, you know, you look in the, you know, newspaper, you know, 6 months later, and you're like, what?
You know. See a product that looks a lot like
that
your product.
Is exactly, mm-hmm. And the story is exactly the same. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Again, same idea. You have to think of it as, you know, it's a compliment, you know.
We're sort of wrapping up here, so I wanted to talk a little bit about America in general being a melting pot. So everybody says, America's a place where we don't need to see color, and we're all the same, and everybody's equal. And I wonder if each of you could speak about, do you agree with that, or do you think that's a helpful thing, a place for us to go, or do you think it is good that we are different and that we talk about it? Alicia, you wanna start with that?
Mm-hmm. One quick aside.
Sure.
I do think, though, that I can't get too annoyed about brands, you know, knocking off Korean products, because also Korean brands do the same thing, you know, the other way around. I think it's just, like, happens in the beauty industry. So, as an aside.
No, totally.
Goes both ways.
So do you think we'll be in a better place if we're all like, we're all the same, it's a melting pot, and we're melted together fully?
No, I think that it's great to preserve individual, you know, heritages and backgrounds and cultures, and I think that's really beautiful, and when that's done right, it just, you know, 1+1 is greater than 2 in those cases. but I don't think that, you know, America feels totally like a melting pot to me yet. I think in the urban cities, maybe coastal areas, but, you know, different places in America, it's not quite there yet. You know, I'm Asian, there's so many Asians here, but sometimes I'll go places and I still definitely get like a stare when I walk into a Starbucks, you know? Really? And yeah. So I don't feel that quite yet. But I do think that, you know, the goal also isn't to just become these everyone is kind of one and the same with, I think there's a certain pride and joy that people can have about learning about each other's differences and heritages and embracing that and how it all works together.
Yeah. Ursula?
I'm hopeful, but I'm realistic. And I feel like we're still fighting racism. So who knows? I would love for us to be all in a melting pot, and I think that's great. And I agree with you. You know, everybody should still, you know, embrace their individual cultures because we don't want that to die out. Mm-hmm. But we also have to embrace the fact that new cultures are beginning. Everybody's mixing in the world, black, white, Asian, everybody's together. Mm-hmm. So many mixed kids running around. It's like we have to learn to work together. We have to.
That's exactly my point. You know, I agree with that 1,000%. I, again, have 3 little girls. I am married to, you know, a white South Carolina, his words, not mine, redneck, mm-hmm. Okay? And we do lots of things. We, you know, I cook Filipino food most of the time, but you know what? I had to learn how to make Mamaw's chicken and rice because I'll tell you right now, my girls like to eat that, okay? So we are always, you know, and we as parents, I'm sorry, I'm never getting invited back, sorry. But, silly. But you know, and we mix this family and we tell them that, you know, mommy's side is not better, daddy's side is not better. I whisper sometimes mommy's side is better. But exactly, thank you. But you know what I mean? And when we go, and this is not beauty necessarily, but when we go down south to visit Mama, and they say, can we wear our cowboy boots? And I'm like, of course we can, you know, and we need to embrace it. And beauty-wise, again, we're so blessed to have so many different influences. And, you know, like Ursula said from the get-go of this entire thing, it's about respect at the end of the day. And if you respect it and you honor it and you hold it up and you say, you know what, we are so lucky that we live in this world right now. We're even allowed to express ourselves beauty-wise, fashion-wise, you know, the way we speak, whatever. It's amazing. So, yes, I'm hopeful. I'm realistic. But I'm going to do everything, as we all are, that we can to really make this truly a place where we can all be free.
All right. Well, hopefully this is the start of a lot of dialogue and a lot of conversations to come. I want to thank all of our panelists here.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you very much.
And you can go to fatmascara.com. We'll put up some notes from this podcast and links to all of their sites so you can check out their work. Hire them to do the covers of your magazines and advertisements. And we'll go from there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We mentioned a lot of products and people and places and brands and things in this episode. So I just want to put it out there. If you want to find out where any of those things are, go to fatmascara.com.
And you can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter and at fatmascara for both of those things. And you can also contact us directly by emailing us at info@fatmascara.com.
So profesh.
So profesh. Thanks for listening, guys.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.